Shabbos Perek Gimel, Mishnah Aleph 3:1. This is the Perek called Kira, which means a stove, and it discusses the halachas of cooking bishul on Shabbos. Now, the malacha of bishul is one of the 39 malachas, and it involves transforming something through heat. So the typical and most common case is taking a chicken and putting it in the oven or in a pot of water, and then cooking the chicken, which then transforms the chicken into a cooked chicken, and that would be the Issa D'oraisa of Bishul. But as the Rambam explains, you could transform other things through Bishul as well. In other words, you could take steel and you could anneal it or with heat, or you could melt wax, and that would also be called Bishul. So you're transforming this solid substance, in these cases, through heat. Now, the Av Malacha, it's not perfectly clear whether it's actually bishul, which is cooking with water, or ofa, which is cooking through dry heat. There's not too much of a nafkamina, a practical difference, but just for the sake of completion here, as we discuss the malach in general. So many learn that it's ofa, the actual malach is afiyah, that's baking, meaning dry heat in an oven. And the first malachas are the sadur, the pas, the order of making bread, starting with already with plowing and planting, and ending up with baking that bread in the oven. There are those Rishonim already who don't accept that ofa, baking, is the correct av malacha, because the construction of the Mishkan didn't involve baking bread. That was part of the functioning of the Mishkan, but the construction did need bread. However, to make the dyed fabrics that were used in the Mishkan, one did need to do bishul, need to cook, by putting the dye stuff in the cauldron to let it dye the fabrics. So dyeing the fabrics in hot water would be bishul, as you cook up those dyes in the water. And so according to many, it is indeed bishul that is the av malacha. Either way, transforming something through heat is forbidden min ha-Torah. Now, our Mishnah is actually going to focus on the issues of shehiya or chazara. Shehiya means leaving something on the fire before Shabbos, and chazara means putting something on the fire on Shabbos. So shehiya means it's happening on Friday afternoon going into Shabbos. Chazara means it's happening on Shabbos day proper. And the question is, can one do that, or how can one do that on Shabbos? The issue in this Mishnah, therefore, is really not about bishul at all. Because as we learned in the previous perek, according to Beit Hillel, and that's the halacha, there's no problem with shvisas kelim. Your stuff, your property, need not rest on Shabbos. So to put 5 minutes before Shabbos comes in, a bowl of cold water onto the stove, and then let it boil on Shabbos is not a problem. Because although boiling is happening on Shabbos, there's no requirement for your property to not, you know, if you set into motion, there's no problem with it happening passively. The concern, therefore, in our Mishnah is something totally different. It's the concern of, if you put something on the fire before Shabbos, we're afraid that perhaps you won't be satisfied with how cooked your food is. You'll want it to be warmer or more cooked. And that being the case, you'll come to stoke the coals. Now, stoking the coals, and I think these are wood-burning ovens that they had. So in a wood-burning oven, what happens is, as the wood burns, so there gets an outer layer of carbon on the outside of the wood, and then, since that sort of suffocates the fire deeper in, so the flames kind of burn down, you have like a, kind of like a burning ember. If you want it, if you reoxygenate it by stoking the coals, that means you kick up the coals with like a poker, with a stick, and you let air get in there. So then the flame will reemerge and, you know, go back to cooking. Now, causing the flame to reemerge by stoking the coals or agitating the wood, etc., would be an Issur D'oraisa, if you did it. But the Issur D'oraisa we're talking about actually is not bishul, it's not cooking. It's mavir, which is kindling a flame. So according to the issue that we're assuming, we're talking about the problem of shehiyah, of leaving things on the fire on Friday afternoon, what we're really concerned about in this Mishnah is maybe someone will come to stoke the flames, and that stoke the coal to make a flame, I should say, which would be the Issur D'oraisa of mavir, not of bishul. And to prevent that from happening, perhaps we're going to have restrictions on leaving your food on the fire. Chazara literally means returning food to the fire. Now, this doesn't need to be food that was actually previously on the fire on Shabbos. What it is putting food on the fire perhaps even for the first time on Shabbos, but it's called Chazar, returning, because this food is already cooked. Okay? Details will come in a moment in the Mishnah. But since the food's already been cooked, you're re-putting it on the stove for a second time, because it was there on Thursday, let's say. There's leftovers. So what could go wrong if you have cooked food going on the fire on Shabbos? The answer is nothing much can go wrong, in as much as the food is cooked, you're not cooking food anymore. And if the food is cooked, you're not likely to stoke the coals. The concern, however, is what's called mechzik mevashel. It looks to a third party like you're cooking. In other words, someone sees you take some food out of the fridge and put it on the stove on Saturday afternoon. So it sure looks like you're cooking. And then people think you could cook on Shabbos, etc. So those are the concerns that we're navigating. Shehiya, which is the concern ultimately of Shema Yechata B'Gachalim, lest you stoke the coals and be over Mavir, so you have a din derabanan not to do that under certain scenarios. And, or Chazara, which is putting it back on the fire, which looks like you're cooking, and that's also a problem. Both those are derabanans. Okay, so our perikia will discuss the halachas of Bishol and the issues of Shehiya and Chazara, specifically here in the first Mishnah. And then in the next perik, the fourth parak, will discuss other ways you could keep your food warm without having it on the fire at all. That's Bamet Tomlin, the ways in which one can do proper insulation of food to keep it warm on Shabbos. Okay, so the Mishnah starts out by saying, Kira shesikua bakashu guvava. If you have a kira, now a kira is a stove. Best see a picture, it makes it much easier, but essentially this thing was attached, it was like kind of cemented into the ground, and it had a compartment underneath where you put the wood in for burning. Then on, think of it as a big rectangle, a big box. And then on top of the box, you have essentially two holes, like a stove, where you could put pots. You could fit two pots on top of the box, which is this little oven, if you will, but it functions like a stove, our stoves. And the fire goes in through the side by putting in wood, and it burns at the bottom. Now, of the various types of ovens slash stoves that Chazal used, the kira, also called the kirayim, is the least intense heat. The reason why is because it's rectangular, and the fire goes in through the bottom, and then you have like two places to put pots on top. So the heat is not especially concentrated. So in such a kira, which is well translated as a stove, that was shehesikua, that was fueled with kash and gvava. According to the Bar Tanura, kash is straw, and gvava is kindling, like other small pieces of wood. So those things, once they burn out, there's no coals to stoke. There's nothing there anymore. It's like if you're in a campfire and you use balls of newspaper, let's say, as kindling to get it going. Once the newspaper's burned, there's nothing, there's no more you can get out of it. You can't stoke it out and get more burning out of it, because once it's burned, it's burned out. It's very thin. There's no inner layer of unburned material surrounded by an outer layer of carbon crust. So if what heated your fire is kash and gvava, straw and other thin bits of wood, and so, as the bartender understands it, so then there's no concern of shemi yechateh, lest a person comes to stoke the coals, because there's no coals to stoke. There's nothing nor fire can get out, nor heat to get out and be released from that fuel source. According to Rashi and Tosos, by the way, kash, the gvava, isn't just twigs, it's another part of the straw. So in other words, when you harvest wheat, the upper part you take to the threshing floor, lower part you leave attached to the ground. Kash and gavava refer to the lower part that's left in the ground and the upper part that was left in the threshing floor after you removed the kernels. But the same idea. So if that's the case, nosn aleb tavshil, you are, yes, allowed, and the word nosn here, which means to place, we will translate here, according to the Chacham's reading of the Mishnah, as shehiya. You're allowed to place, meaning on Erev Shabbos, on Friday afternoon, you're allowed to place a leha tavshil. You can put upon such a stove that was heated with kash and gvava, straw and kindling, you can put your tavshil. Your tavshil is your food dish, meaning like think of a stew or a cholent. Okay? No problem. Why can you do that on Friday afternoon? Because come Shabbos, there's no reason in the world you would stoke the coals, even if the food wasn't warm, because there's nothing to stoke. On the other hand, begefes uve eitzim, if your fuel source for your kira was gefes is oily pulp, meaning that you, once you press sesame seeds or you press olives, so what happens is you get the oil out, the sesame oil or the olive oil out, you're left with this kind of pulp that can burn, and since it's sort of suffused with oil, it'll burn great. And that being the case, that's gefes. Or eitzim. Eitzim is wood. So if your fuel source was wood proper or oily pulp, lo yiten, you may not put your tavshil, your food, on the fire, even on Friday afternoon. Aj yigrof o aj yiten esa efer. Until you do something to show and ensure that you won't come to stoke the coals on Shabbos proper. What would that be? Either yigrof, gerufa means to rake. That means you remove the coals from beneath the pot that's on the stove. So that means there's nothing there to stoke. Now, according to the Bar Tanura, it means totally remove all the coals out from underneath the kira, so there's nothing left to stoke. According to certain Rishonim, it doesn't require removing the coals from out entirely. It just means push them away from being directly beneath the pot. And then if there's nothing really beneath the pot to heat them up so intensely. And that would, again, show that you're not planning on stoking the coals. It would be a reminder to you not to stoke the coals. That's the grufa. Now, according to the second shot, it's really analogous to the yitin as the efer. Yitin as the efer means put ashes down. Put ashes down means that you now are killing the fire by cooling it off and showing that you're still not intending to stoke it up again because you put ashes, which, you know, are making the fire go out. So by putting the ashes on, yitin as the efer, putting the ashes, so then now you've made the fire go down and showed you're not interested in stoking it up again, and then it would be okay to now put your food on Friday afternoon because you have no fear since you did grufa, raking, or putting on the ashes. So then we have no fear you'll stoke the coals, and therefore you can leave it on a Friday afternoon. In the Gemara and later halach literature, we refer to those two possibilities as grufa, raking, and ketuma. Ketuma means placing of the ashes, okay, but just so you know the lingo. That being the case, the Mishnah goes on to say, Beishame omrim chamen aval lo tavshil. Beishame hold that even if shehi is allowed, it's only allowed in a very restricted case, the case of chamen. Chamen means hot water in the Mishnah. I understand that Sephardim today talk about chamen, they refer to like stew, like cholent, a warm dish of food, but no, not in the Mishnah. Chamen in the Mishnah means hot water. And being that it's hot water and it's sort of homogenous, there's not much to, no reason in the world you'd want to stir up the coals because nothing more to get out of the water by stirring it up. And to get it more cooked thoroughly and, you know, through. So therefore, there's no concern, says Beis Shammai. But lo tavshil, you may not place before Shabbos any cholent or stew or food, whatever it is, on the fire to go into Shabbos, even if it's cooked, because you might come soak the coals. And he doesn't accept for food even the precautions of the grufa or the ketuma, the putting down of the ashes. He doesn't accept that as possibilities. According to Beis Hillel, not only does Beis Hillel say you could put on chamen and tavshil, as the Mishnah says here, Beis Hillel omrim chamen v'tavshil, put both either or, hot water or hot food. Beis Shammai would even say that if the food would not benefit from any stoking of the coals, let's say it's already fully cooked, and if the more heat that's applied to it, the more ruined, as the Gemara calls it, mitstamek v'ralo, it gets more congealed and loses, hardens up, and becomes bad by overcooking. So you have no reason in the world to be afraid that you're going to stoke the coals because no benefit at all to that. So therefore, according to Beis Hillel, you wouldn't even need to do grufa and ketuma for such an oven because there's no reason to be afraid of it at all. Now, the Mishnah continues by saying, Beis Shammai omrim notlan avalo machzirin. Beis Shammai say, we let you do shehiya, we let you leave it on, at least the hot water, but notlan, if you take it off, that's okay to make yourself a cup of hot water, a tea, whatever the story is, avalo machzirin, you can never put it back on the fire. There's no such thing as on Shabbos putting things back on the fire because it looks like you're cooking. Beis Hillel omrim af machzirin, Beis Hillel say, no, there's not a problem with that. You're allowed to do shehiya, leaving on, and you're allowed to do chazara to return the food or the hot water to the oven. For Beis Hillel, for chazara to be mutar, it has to be that you had your hand on the food stuff the whole time, and when you took it off, before you put it back on again, I'm assuming it's not fully cooked. So that you, and according to l'hachachila, at least for Ashkenazim, you have to have in mind from the outset that when you take it off the fire, you're putting it back on. There are actually a total of five conditions potentially to have in mind, but in any case, as long as you kept your hand on it, didn't let it go, didn't put it down, you can put it back on the fire. And that's, you know, so that meaning, if you took your cholent pot off to serve it out, you could put the cholent back on the hot plate. It's okay as long as you didn't let go of the chalent, etc., the chalent pot. Okay, that's the Mishnah, and it's straightforward, and it's good, and that's how the Chachamim understand the Mishnah. The problem is, what makes this Mishnah quite difficult, is that there's another Tana, Hananiah is his name, and Hananiah understands that the Mishnah, in its opening lines, when it talks about Yitan placing, it's not talking about Shehiyah. It doesn't mean placing it on Friday afternoon. It's talking about Chazara, putting it on Shabbos day. And Hananiah is going to reread the Mishnah. And according to the Ramah for Ashkenazim, the Halacha is going to follow Hananiah. Although the Rif and Rambam and the Sephardim are concerned that the Halacha is the Chamim, and we're talking about Shehiyah, and more strict. And the Machaber brings Belashitas. The Ramah brings that the Minigus be Makel like Hananiah. So we got to learn the Hananiah's approach to the Mishnah. So we have to read it a second time. According to Hananiah, when we're talking about things where this Mishnah starts out by talking about putting on Shabbos day, so he understands that as long as food is cooked going into Shabbos, you won't come to stoke the coals under any circumstances. So what does cooked mean? So cooked means at least cooked to the point of being edible, and the technical phrase for this is kemachel ben drusoy, like the food, the ma'achal, the food of ben drusoy, this fellow named ben drusoy, who was a thief on the run. And because he was on the run all the time, he ate his food rare. He didn't have it overcooked because he didn't have the time to wait around to get fully cooked. So how much is ma'achal ben drusoy? According to Rashi, means a third of the required time for cooking. And according to the Rambam, it's half cooked. Okay, so meaning once it's half cooked, according to everybody, in Hanani's world, there's no reason in the world to assume a person would stoke the coals because his food's already cooked as it is, and therefore there's not a problem. So Shehiyah is a non-issue. The only issue is Chazara. That being the case, meaning Hanani would agree if we're talking about food that was not to Michael ben Drusoy cooked, that he would agree with the Chacham that there's a fear of stoking the coals. That would be an issue, but we're not talking about that. The Mishnah is talking about a case where the food's already cooked, at least to Michael ben Drusoy. And that being the case, what we're just concerned about is the Mechzik Mevashel part of it. Or stoking the coals if so therefore that being the case, the Mishnah says inside, Kira, if you have an oven, Shehisikua Bakashu Gvava, that had been fueled with straw and kindling, Nosna Aleh Tavshil, you're allowed to put onto that stovetop on Shabbos, meaning Chazara, and that's okay. Because it doesn't look like you're cooking and you won't stoke the coals. The stoking coals issue could be for warming up. Don't forget that you could stoke the coals to warm it up, and stoking the coals would still be the problem of Mavir, not Bishel, of making a fire. But here we're saying, since it's already cooked, we're not afraid you're going to stoke the coals, and we're talking here about Chazara, but there's nothing to stoke to warm up your food again, because we're talking about a stove that was heated with Kash Gvava, the straw, and the kindling. Now, according to Hananiah, we didn't even have to discuss Shehiyah. Meaning Shehiyah went without saying as being totally mutter, assuming food is cooked. So we don't discuss Shehiyah. Shehiyah is mutter. No reason in the world, says Hananiah, a person who stoked the coals on Shabbos to cook it more. No way, it's Shabbos. But Chazara, we would be afraid because you're talking about cold food. You're talking about looking bad. And that being the case, if it's heated by Kash and Gvava, it's okay to do Chazara. But Begefetzuva Eitzim, if your fuel source was that oily pulp or wood, lo yiten, then you may not put food on Shabbos back onto the stove, ad sheyigrof or ad sheyitom yiten es ha'efer, unless you first pull out those coals or apply the ashes to the wood beneath the kira, because at that point certainly it doesn't look like you're cooking, you're not going to stoke the coals because they're already put out, and therefore you won't, there's no concern at all. Beshame Omrim, Chaman Avlo Tavshil. Even in Hananiah's world, who is a lenient world, but Beshame, I'm not agreeing to this at all. First of all, Beshame, I say, the only thing to talk about having food in the fire is Chaman, hot water, but never Tavshil. We're never going to allow food on the fire on Shabbos. Beshame Omrim, Chaman Vitavshil. Yes, you could have hot water and hot food on the fire. And according to Hananiah, that means that you could. We lapse really into the discussion here about Shehiyah, ironically. We're saying, even for Shehiyah, Beshame say, we're only letting Shehiyah. We've gone into leave on Friday afternoon, which was not spoken up to now, but Shehiyah is going to be okay only for hot water. And Beisela say Shehiyah is okay for according to Hananya, for hot water and hot food. Beshame omrim notlin avaloma chazirin. Beshame say this whole chazara thing that Hananya was talking about. So nothing doing. You're allowed to take food off the fire, and that food means hot water, I should say. The hot water that you left on the fire, Shehiyah, is allowed to stay on. Avaloma chazirin, you can never put anything back on the fire. And Shabbos says Beshame, totally disagreeing with Hananya's approach. And Beisil omrim afma chazirin. Beisil say yes, chazar is no problem. Assuming that you've raked the coals or put ashes on them. So in the case, according to Hananya, there's no real difference between Shehi and Chazara. It's always going to be permissible to do either of them, provided that you have raked the coals or put on ashes, cover things up. We'll discuss liquids and so on later on, but the point is, in general, that's not a problem. And the halacha for Ashkenazim basically is actually going to go with Hananya. I'll discuss a little more about the halacha lemaisa and the technicalities and the blech and so after the next Mishnah Bez Hashem. Shabbos Per Gimel, Mishnah Beis, 3-2. This Mishnah continues on where the previous Mishnah ended. We're talking about ovens and using them on Shabbos. So here we're talking about a tanur. A tanur, in contrast to the kira of the previous Mishnah, is much hotter. It's much more effective at heating and maintaining its heat. The reason why is because the kira of the previous Mishnah was sort of a big prism, like a rectangular shaped stovetop where you had wood burning inside at the bottom. It was cemented to the ground. And then on top, you had two openings for two pots. So it wasn't so concentrated. The tanur, in contrast, of our Mishnah is very intense and very concentrated. It's wide at the bottom, cemented to the ground, and the heat goes in there. The fire burns. And then on top, it's narrow. And it comes to almost like a point. So it's like, think of it as like a cone that's been chopped over the top. The technical name for that, if you care, is that shape is called a frustum, F-R-U-S-T-U-M. In any case, so on top of the tanur, you put one single pot, and since there's a large fire burning at the bottom, it's much more intense. And that being the case, the halachas of the tanur are much more strict than that of the kira. The Mishnah says, tanur, if you have such an oven, even if its heat source is that straw under other kindling, the things that burn out very quickly, even so, lo yiten bein mitocho bein malgabav, you cannot use it on Shabbos, according to the reading of the Chachamim, that yiten in the previous Mishnah was referring to shehia, meaning put it on Friday afternoon. Lo yiten, you may not put anything even on Friday afternoon to stay on for Shabbos, shehia, on a tanur, even if its heat source was just kashu gvava, the kindling and the straw. And of course, all the more so if it was actual wood. Because we're afraid you might come to stoke it up because it's so effective in cooking, explains the Teres Yisrael, that even if there be one little tiny bit left of, you know, some sparks to be capitalized upon by stoking them up, then you could use that tanur. And therefore, you cannot use the tanur at all, even if its heat source is just the kashu gvava, the straw and stubble. Lo yiten, you can't put it on, according to the Chachamim, and it would be chazar. You can't return it to it, according to Hananya. Yiten would, according to Hananya, be chazara, put it back on Shabbos. Meaning, according to Hananya, shehi would be permissible on a tanur. Bein mitocho, bein magabav, you cannot use it, neither mitocho, that would be like on a shelf inside the tanur, where it's extremely hot, or even al gabav, on its side. So according to the Bar Tanur, the pshat here isn't on top, but rather on the outside of the wall. So all three are true. You cannot use the tanur, whether on a shelf inside the tanur, on top, on the stovetop, or even on the outside wall where it gets so hot. According to Hananya again, the shehiyah part would be permissible, but beyond that, not. Now we have a third kind of oven they used, or stove, and this is not as hot as a tanur, but hotter than the kira. This is called the kupach. So the kupach is, again, kind of rectangular, but instead of having a space on top for two different pots, it only has space for one. So it's pretty much the fire burning directly beneath the stove on top, and therefore it gets hotter, but not as hot as a tanur because it's not concentrated on top. It's not a big fire on the bottom and a small space on top. It's not sloping inwards as the walls go up. So the kupach is in the middle. Kupach, if you have such a kupach, shesekua bakasha gvava, if its heat source had been the straw and stubble, so then hareze kikiraim, then its halachas are the same as the kiraim, meaning that you could use it on Shabbos, according to the Chamim, we're talking about Shehiyah, according to the Chananiah, we're talking about Chazara, and all the more so, Shehiyah. Begefes of Eitzim, however, if your kupach had been heated with gefes, remember that's the oily pulp, the Eitzim, that was wood logs, so in those cases, so then that heat, of course, is more intense, and there's something to be extracted from those half-burned out things if you stoke them up again. Harehu katanur, its halacha is like a tanur, meaning you cannot use it at all. You cannot use the kupach at all on Shabbos if it has been heated by gefes, the oily pulp, or the eitzim, the wood. Now, period. Just as a side point here, as I said in the previous mishnah, there are those shitas, that's the Baal Maor and the Ran, who hold that the requirements for grufa, for raking, isn't raking all the coals out, like the Bartanur learns, but rather just the grufa, the previous mishnah, the raking was raking the coals to the sides, away from being directly beneath the stovetop, and that would be sufficient, the same way that the placing of the ashes, the katuma, is sufficient as indicating you're not planning on firing this thing up again and stoking it. So too, in the previous mission, we said, according to the Ran and Baal Maor, you could just rake the coals to the side, not out of the oven. So according to them, here, they would hold that raking the coals to the side is insufficient in the kupach, but pulling the coals out altogether would make it now usable because not much really to stoke anymore because you've pulled all the coals out. According to the Bartanura, there could be the one or two coals left. You could always stoke things again. Okay? Halach lemaisa, our stoves and ovens are treated like a kiraim, like the kira. That is to say, our ovens, so they don't open on top. There's not heat going up. They open from the side. Therefore, the heat is less intense. So they're like a kira. And Rav Moshe Paskins, even our range tops, the stoves, you know, with our range tops that we use, on top of our stoves. So those are also treated like a kira, says Rav Moshe. The minhag, of course, is to cover the knobs and the ranges themselves with a blech, with like a big metal covering, which has the status of being like of katuma, of like applying ashes, because it shows you have no intention to fiddle with the fire on Shabbos. And I guess for the halacha lemaisa, Ashkenazim are even makel lektosos like Chananya, meaning you could do both Shehiyah and Chazara to such a blech covered top. Again, for Chazara to work something coming off the fire, if it's you would need to have certain conditions met. I think I mentioned the previous mishnah. If not, I'll stop. I won't mention them again here. Chazar is a little more complicated, putting things back on the fire, so you shouldn't look like you're cooking. But in any case, Shehiyah is certainly permitted. As we all know, we do leave our cholent going on Erev Shabbos, so it is warm for us and hot on Shabbos. And that's true even if the cholent went into Shabbos being raw. We still permit that. Shabbos per Gimel, Mishnah Gimel, 3:3. We said in the beginning of the perek that the malacha of bishul or ofa, of cooking on Shabbos, is using heat to transform something. Now, the truth is, not just any heat is the issue. Really, we're talking about heat that came from a fire, as they did in the Beis HaMikdash, when they either boiled up the cauldrons to dye the fabric, or if it was to heat up the ovens to make the lechem apanim, the showbreads. It's fire heat we're talking about here. And that would be true by if you're using it to melt wax, or to heat up metal to be red hot. All those things would be the malacha d'oraisa. Now the truth is that although the normal place where the heat starts is a fire, it doesn't need to be that it's fire directly that's heating something. In other words, you boil up water in a pot that's sitting on top of a fire, then you turn off the fire, and then you put, let's say, an egg in that water to become soft boiled, whatever it is. So since that water is still yod to lettuce bowl, it's able to cook, it's in the clear rishon, it's in the container of the that was on top of the fire. And even though there's no fire present, the pot still has the heat of the fire. And that being the case, if you would cook something like the egg inside the pot of water, that would be also the malacha of bishul midoraisa. You're still over doraisa because that's how one transforms through fire, either through direct fire, that's called esh, or even through something which is heated by the fire, which is called tolda of Esh. Tolda is a descendant, an offspring. So the point is, if it's even a second generation thing, but it was heated by the fire source, and you use that to cook or transform through heat, that would or bake, etc., all those things would be a malacha d'oraisa, chai v'chatas, etc. Now, if the heat source is not fire, like, for example, direct sunlight, so there is no Torah prohibition against cooking something in the sun. You want to make some iced tea and put it in the sun to become hot tea, for argument's sake, or you want to just put something out to slow cook in the heat of the sun. You want to, I don't know what, you want to bake matzah the old-fashioned way and put some dough out there in the sun to cook. So that would not be prohibited on Shabbos, okay? If you would, let's say, have a frying pan out in the sun and it gets hot from the heat of the sun, and then you crack an egg and fry an egg in that frying pan, so here you're using the heat of the sun, which preheated the frying pan, which cooked the egg, and therefore that would be permitted midoraisa. Our mission is going to consider what happens if you, is that indeed permissible? And the reason why it might not be the case is though, although everyone's going to agree that using direct sunlight to cook something is permitted on Shabbos, when it comes to a frying pan, it's not all clear. If someone's looking at you cooking in a frying pan, they cannot tell if that frying pan was preheated by the sunshine, or if you heated it on your stove, and now you just took it off the stove, and you're cooking the egg in a frying pan that was heated by the stove. You can't tell anymore where the heat came from, which warmed up and preheated the frying pan. That'll be machlokas tonight, whether you can use what's called tolda of chama. Chama being sun, everyone agrees that direct sun heating is permitted, but tolda of chama, a second degree, you know, offspring of the sun heating, meaning the sun heated the frying pan then becomes the place in which you're cooking the egg, that's a machlokas, because we're afraid people will not know that your frying pan was heated by the sun. They'll assume it was heated by the fire, and that being the case, you know, people can misunderstand, and the halacha can be misunderstood, and therefore the rabbis, according to the chacham and the halacha, forbid a tolda de'esh, an offspring of the fire, a second degree preheated, a tolda of chama, something that was preheated by the sun, the rabbis forbade it, and that's the halacha, but we'll have Yossi disagrees. Okay, so here the Mishnah says inside, Ein nosnin beitza b'tzad ha-mecham b'shvil shetiskal gel. You may not put an egg on the side of a kettle, mecham, something which was like a kettle, water heated on a fire, b'shvil shetiskal gel, so that the egg should become soft-boiled. Again, it's not in the water, just on the side, outside the kettle, heating from the outside. Tiskal gel, a kind of unusual word. A galgal, here is a wheel, because galgal means to roll, because if you take an egg that's raw, and you try to roll it, you'll not succeed. But once it's been soft-boiled or hard-boiled, then certainly it rolls just fine. So it makes it, the Mishnah is referring to, you know, lightly cooked eggs as being tiskal gel, as being able to roll. That's how they're called, roasted. So that's forbidden according to everybody, and if you did that, you'd be chayav achatas, because now you're using tolda of esh, you're using fire that heated up the water to cook this egg, and that would be asur. Also says the Tanakhama here, v'lo yifke'ena b'sudarin. Not only can you not use a tolda of esh, something which is preheated by a fire, you can't even use a tolda of chama, something which is preheated by the sun. The case here, yifke'ena means something like to crack the eggs, b'sudarin, into some, a sudar is like a handkerchief or a scarf, a head wrap. The point is, you took your black handkerchief, you set it out in the sun, it got piping hot, and then you cracked an egg into the handkerchief, and the handkerchief cooked the egg to make a nice, you know, poached egg on the handkerchief, whatever the story is. So that, says the Tanakhama, you may not do midrabanan, because the handkerchief was heated by the sun. It's a tolda of chama, it's second degree from heat source, from the sun, and that's forbidden because people won't realize that you necessarily that you cooked it with sun heat. You might have used fire heat. Rabbi Yossi Mata, Rabbi Yossi disagrees. He says it's permitted, meaning Rabbi Yossi has no problem with using a tolda of chama, of preheated by the sun material, because he doesn't think people will get confused with the halacha. Halacha, however, follows Tanakhama, that one may not use tolda of chama, and that really makes it kind of counterintuitive. We're saying esh, a direct fire source, and tolda of esh, indirect preheated by the fire, is asur min d'oraisa. Everyone agrees to that. Chama, direct sunlight, is mutter according to everybody. And tolda of chama, preheated by the sun, using sun heat, but not the son directly, to cook something is asar midda rabbanan, according to Chacham and Halacha, Rabbi Yossi allows. The Mishnah continues and says, lo yat minena b'chol uva'avak drachim. You cannot take an egg and insert it into chol is sand. Avak drachim means like the dust on the roads. Bishvil shetitzale, with the intention of getting the egg to kind of roast and cook, become hard-boiled, let's say. The reason why you can't do it, according to the Chacham, is straightforward, because how did the sand get hot? It got hot from the sun. So you have a toldav chama, straightforward, and toldav chama is forbidden to cook with. Now here, Rabbi Yossi doesn't disagree. So that's the case. The question is, why does Rabbi Yossi allow preheated handkerchiefs by the sun, but forbid preheated sand that was heated by the sun? So the Gemara gives two different approaches, and we need to keep them both in mind for the next Mishnah. The first approach he has is that it's a kind of hatmana, a kind of insulation. We'll learn in the next parak, the fourth parak, that there's various restrictions put on insulating food to stay warm on Shabbos, and the concern is that people will come to use remets, which are like glowing embers, or embers, hot embers, to be their insulating material, which can be stoked up to make a new fire. So according to the first approach in the Gemara, the reason why you can't use sand as your insulation is because people might come to use hot ash from the bottom of an oven as insulation in the future. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi agrees you may not use hot sand. The other approach, Rabbi Yossi, in the Gemara, is that the issue here is one of the sand itself. So Rashi says the problem is if you're digging out sand from your backyard to put your egg into, so then you might do the isser of chofer, of digging on Shabbos, or could be even, you know, bona. You're not digging holes in your backyard on Shabbos is forbidden either, because if you're using it for storage, it's a malacha bona, building a storage place in your backyard, or chofer is preparing the ground for planting. So you can't start digging out sand on Shabbos, and therefore the second approach, why Riosi doesn't disagree, is because of the digging. Tosas doesn't like Rashi's approach for various reasons, and he suggests other possibilities. One is that it's muktzah, that the sand is muktzah, that's why you can't fiddle with it. The Gemara, if you learn it, comes up saying that if the sand were pre-dug and soft, then you, according to the second approach in the Gemara, Rabbi Yossi would allow you to drop the egg in and just kind of slide in. No mukta problem, no digging problem if it's nice soft sand. According to the first approach in the Gemara, which is, again, that we're talking about the concern about hatmana, insulation, that would be prohibited anyways. Okay, so here the halacha is clear that you can't use sand, and keep those two approaches in the Gemara in mind for the next Mishnah. Shabbos per Gimel, Mishnah Dalad 3-4, Maisa. Now Maisa means an event that actually occurred, and it typically comes in the Mishnah to bring a proof of a story that is consistent with what was said in the previous Mishnah. In fact, in the Gemara, in the Bavli, so this Mishnah is not broken up. In other words, what we said in the previous Mishnah, referring to using sand to heat the egg, is directly followed by the word Maisa in the same Mishnah. Here it's broken with two Mishnayas, but still, we're going to now be reflecting back on what we said in the previous Mishnah, and we're going to say a following story. Maisa sha'asu anshe Tveria. The people of Tveria once did the following stunt. Vehiviu silon shel tzonen letoch ame shel chamen. Tveria is famous for having hot springs. And the hot springs, of course, are great because they stay warm all year round. They tend to be sort of a little bit stinky and gross, as all hot springs tend to be. So what the people of Tveria did is they said, listen, let's make a mikvah of clear, fresh water from the Kinneret. We'll take a pipe, we'll run the pipe through the hot water of the Chamei Tveria, of the Tveria hot springs, and that will allow the cold water coming from the Kinneret, Lake Kinneret, to be warmed up, and now we can fill a mikvah with clean, fresh, warm water. Brilliant. And since we're not using a fire to cook it up, it seems like it should be okay. So that's what it says here again. Maisa, it happened. She'asu anshe Tveria, the men of Tveria did the following story. Vehiviu silon shel tzonen, they took a pipe of tzonen, of cold water, letoch ama shel chamen, and they put it through a little river or conduit of hot water that was coming from the hot springs, and then they filled up, let's say, a mikvah with that now warm, clean, fresh water. However, v'amru lahen chachamim, the rabbis who observed this contraption, said, im b'shabbos, if we're talking about Shabbos, that you want to use this mikvah or this water, kecham and shehuchim with Shabbos. It has the status of any other water that was heated, I mean like on a fire or whatever it is, or told of Eish, on Shabbos. That being the case, asurin barachitza uvishtia. And that would mean you're not allowed to use this warm water that was heated on Shabbos for rechitza, for washing your body, meaning even the tiniest bit, you can't wash one finger with it because you're benefiting from something that was heated on Shabbos, and the rule is you'd have to wait b'chdei shiasud, as long as it takes, you know, after Shabbos to heat up water that amount. So you can't get any benefit even for one little tiny bit of washing your hands or face, feet, etc. Uvishtia, it's also forbidden to drink from that water because you can't drink from water that was heated on Shabbos. Again, you'd have to wait. Meaning they're treating this as being regularly heated Shabbos water. Uva Yom Tov, and if it, we're talking about a case of Yom Tov, so then the water is kechamen shechochmu b'Yom Tov, has the status of any other water which was heated on Yom Tov. Now the rule is, you are yes allowed to boil water on Yom Tov, as long as you have the fire from before. And that being the case, you would be allowed to drink this water, but the rule is that we don't heat water for bathing on Yom Tov. The reason why is because according to for Ashkenazim, according to Tosfos, the reason why is because that would be an Isra Doraisa, in fact, of simply, although there's a rule of Matoch when which says that since certain things are permitted on Yom Tov, so then everything like that is permitted on Yom Tov. So that means that you can carry on Yom Tov since you need to be, let me take a step back, I'm sorry. The rules of Yom Tov are, in terms of the halachas, are a little more lenient than the rules of Shabbos because one is allowed to prepare food on Yom Tov. So things that are for food prep, like for example cooking, or let's say carrying, are permitted on Yom Tov, while they're forbidden on Shabbos. The rule is that since they permitted it, the Torah permits it in general, the rabbi didn't forbid it, even if you're not doing it specifically for cooking purposes. But that's true, and so that means, for example, a person now can sort of carry on Yom Tov. You can carry your shofar to shul on Yom Tov, it's not a problem. However, there are still certain restrictions on, according to Tosfos, on cooking water, if you're cooking it not for the sake of consuming it, but for the sake of bathing in it. And the reason why is because the Matoch principle, according to Tosfos, only allows one to do things that are shav l'chol nefesh, that the purpose for which you're doing this cooking on Shabbos isn't stam just to do work on Shabbos, but you do something which everyone needs on Yom Tov, is the kind of thing that everyone needs on Yom Tov. So everyone needs to eat on Yom Tov, so therefore all eating type things are permitted. Drinking hot water permitted. As far as bathing goes, Tosfos understood that bathing is not the kind of thing people need to do every day, and therefore, and even that they do every day. And that being the case, one would not be allowed to heat water on a Yom Tov. If one did, for the sake of bathing, he'd be over in Isra Doraisa. And therefore, the halach would be according to Tosfos, even halach lamaisa for Ashkenazim, is even water that was heated before Yom Tov cannot be used for sharing on Yom Tov. And that's a din derabanan, unless one come to cook and heat the water on Yom Tov proper. For the record, the Rambam is more lenient. The Rambam says that, in fact, one could heat water for bathing on Yom Tov, midoraisa, just midorabanan. We don't do that because lest one come to use a bathhouse and there's restrictions on bathing in a bathhouse, etc. And therefore, the Rambam would hold that before Yom Tov, if the water was heated, one could use that water, the hot water, for bathing on Yom Tov, and that would be the halacha for Sephardim, lamaisa. Okay, anyways, so back to here, we're saying that if you use this contraption, the Tveria contraption of heating the cold water by running it through the little river or conduit of hot Tveria water, so on Yom Tov, so that would be like heating it on Yom Tov, which means it's permitted to drink, because you can cook water to drink on Yom Tov, no problem, but you can't use it for bathing, and according to, I'll explain now, bathing, this restriction is you could use hot water for bathing, washing your hands or feet or face, because that's something that everyone does every day. And therefore would be permitted. But washing the rest of your body, meaning your whole body, that would not be allowed. That's what the Mishnah here is saying, that it's like chamin, like hot water, shehuchm b'yom tov, that was heated on Yom Tov, and therefore it's asurin b'rechitza, one couldn't wash his whole body with that hot water. But you could wash one part of your body at a time, or your hands, your feet, or your face, etc. Okay. And mutarim b'shtiyah, and one could drink that water. So, and the men of Tveria relented. They followed the Psak of the Rabbanan and the Chachamim, and that being the case, they dismantled their contraption of heating Kinneret water on Shabbos or Yom Tov by running it through the Chamei Tveria. Now, just reflecting back for a second, what is the problem here? What is the problem with running the cold water through the hot water? So, a simple understanding would be that this hot water, like the Chachamim, is heated, preheated, and like we said in the previous Mishnah, and that's why it says Maisa, it's reflecting the previous Mishnah, we're saying you can't use preheated things to cook on Shabbos or Yom Tov. So, although it may not be heated by a fire, the same way the rabbi said you can't use preheated by the sun frying pans and handkerchiefs, even though it's not heated by a fire necessarily, because people get confused, so too you can't use preheated water for heating things, even if it wasn't heated by a fire, because people will come to get confused and use hot water that was heated by a fire to cook on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Or for heating for bathing on Yom Tov. That's straightforward. Now, according to Biosi, who said that if you didn't heat it by fire, the tolda is permitted to use as a heat source. The question is, according to Biosi, how do you understand the story of the Chamei Tveria that it's prohibited for using that hot water to heat up this cold water when it's not over a fire or heated by a fire? So either you'll say that the issue is simply one of hatmana. Hatmana is something totally different. Hatmana is insulation. So the same way that it started out by saying in the previous Mishnah, you, according to that one pshat, you can't insert the egg into the hot sand because it's like hatmana, it's like insulation with something that could be mistaken later on for a mosaf hevel, for something that adds heat, like the remet, the embers. So too, you cannot insulate your cold water in the hot water pipe, which would be similar, and therefore, according to the first approach, the Amoraim and the Gemara, about Rabbi Yossi, why he agrees that you can't put eggs in the previous mission into hot sand, he would say the same thing, you can't put cold water into hot water because it's insulation. According to the other opinion that we brought in the Gemara, from the Gemara, why Rabbi Yossi agrees you can't put eggs in sand, hot sand, on Shabbos, even though he doesn't have a problem with toldo of chama, preheated by the sun things. So the other pshat was, the issue was digging the sand itself. According to Rashi, the issue was digging in your backyard. According to Tosos, one pshat was it was the issue of muktza. That, of course, has no relevance to the water pipes. There's no digging, there's no muktza issue. So then what we'd have to say is that Rabbi Yossi holds that this water that was heated, the hot water of the Chamei Tveria, the Tveria hot spring water, has a status of tolda of Eish, that it's considered to be like a fire derivative. The way the Gemara puts it, the waters that are heated in Chamei Tveria, the hot springs, pass by the fires of Gehenna. So it is fire that heats it up. The inside of the earth, we know there's geothermal heat, like inside a volcano that gets released there. There's beneath the ground is hotter. There's magma beneath there and so on, melted rock, etc. So Rabbi Yossi's understanding that what goes inside the earth either literally is fire or has the status equivalent to fire and is therefore something that's heated by that geothermal heating is considered to be a told of Eish and would be forbidden. Okay, fine. The halacha again follows the Chachamim, so the whole thing's a non-starter. According to Chachamim in the previous Mishnah, even anything that's heated, whether told of Chama or told of Eish, anything that's preheated, or the water in this case of our Mishnah, would be forbidden as a heat source, so therefore it's straightforward. One couldn't do this Tveria hot spring trick. Okay, the Mishnah's not done. The Mishnah has a whole new topic here, a new paragraph, if you will. We're going to talk about now two particular containers that were used for keeping water warm. Think of it like a thermos, if you will. So, of course, they didn't have real thermoses. They couldn't make vacuums back then. So what did they do? They would have a container filled with water, and then they would use supplemental coals added to the container to keep the water warm. So you have two methods here. You have like coals on the outside, like a little pouch on the outside of the container, which has hot coals, which will add heat. And you have sort of like a double bottomed, or like a fake bottomed container, where the top part is a container for water, and the bottom part is a shelf where you can put hot coals, which will, of course, make the water much, much hotter. So according to Bartunra and most Rishonim here, what we're talking here is an issue of hatmana, of insulation, And we're speaking a bit out of turn because we'll go back to the topic of Hatmana in the next parak. But the rule is that one cannot intellate with something which is called a mosif hevel, something which adds heat to what you're taking off the fire, to the food. So the question is, if you remove the coals from these utensils, are they considered to be mosif hevel or not? So we have two utensils here. The first is called the muliar. Muliar is the one that's heated from the side, has a little pouch on the side for coals. And if you remove that, the coals from the side of the muliar, so then we say that it's not a mosif hevel, the heat diminishes, and you could therefore keep that hot water for use on Shabbos. Whereas the other utensil, called the antichi, which has this big base underneath where the coals go in, even if you rake it out, it's considered to be a mosif hevel. There's so much heat built up inside that container, and even if there might be little bits and pieces of, you know, of coal left in the bottom there, all adds the heat, which is stored inside the container, and therefore it's considered to be a mosif hevel, and therefore you can't use it on Shabbos because you can't insulate in such a container on Shabbos. That's what the bartender learns. Fine. And so the Mishnah says, now inside, muliar, if you have that muliar, the heated from the side version, hagaruf, and you've removed the coals, you raked out those coals from the side of the pouch that's keeping the muliar warm. So then, shosim hemenu b'shabbos. You are, yes, allowed to drink that water on Shabbos, because we're not considering this to be a mosif hevel, it's just in a container, and that's fine. Antichi, on the other hand, if you have the coals at the bottom layer heating up the container of water above it, afal pisha grufa, even if you rake out those coals, still, ein shosim memenu, you can't use that antichi water on Shabbos for drinking because it's considered to be insulated in a container, which is a mosif hevel, which is adding heat to the water because of all the heat stored up inside the bottom of the antichi. And that's what the bartender learns. Tosfos doesn't like that pshat, but because there's no real halacha lamaisa considerations as far as I'm concerned, I will leave Tosfos' explanation out. Shabbos, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Hay, 3-5. Earlier in the Perek, we discussed the halachas of Eish and Told of Eish, the prohibition against using direct fire to cook something or to bake something, which is Issa Duraisa, as well as the Tolda, meaning something that was heated by a fire, like a kettle, which had hot water inside of it, to put an egg inside, or on the outside for that matter, of the kettle, and use the heat stored in the kettle to cook the egg, would also be an Issa Duraisa Bishul. Now we're going to go on to talk about the difference between what's become to be known to us as Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, Kli Shlishi, perhaps. So let me explain. The fire itself and the pot on the fire is what cooks normally. When you take it off the fire, the pot off the fire, and it's still hot, when I say hot, I mean more than Yad to Lettuce Bow, about 110 degrees Fahrenheit or so. So it's able to still cook. And if you put that egg inside the pot, which we called before the told of Eish, but now we'll call it the Kli Rishon, the first utensil. It's called the Kli Rishon because this was the actual utensil, the pot or kettle, that was directly on the fire. And so long as it's still above Yod to Lettuce Bow in temperature, again, literally Yod to Lettuce Bow, the temperature at which one recoils his hand, but Yod to Lettuce is considered to be the threshold where something could still cook, at about 40, whatever, 3 degrees Celsius or so, 110 Fahrenheit, give or take, different shitas in the Rishonim, where in the 40s of Celsius it is, excuse me, in the Poskim. Be that as it may, that's called the Kli Rishon. And basically, Kli Rishon can cook without a problem. That's normal cooking. And if you put something inside the Kli Rishon, you're liable to achatas, etc. It's cooking d'oraisa. Now, when you pour water or food, let's leave solids out. Let's talk about liquids. When you pour water out of the kettle into a cup, let's say, that cup is a Kli Sheni. It's a second utensil, meaning this cup is full of hot water that came from the Kli Rishon, that was on the fire. But since it wasn't on the fire itself, it's not called a Kli Rishon, it's called a Kli Sheni. And in general, the rule is that a Kli Sheni doesn't cook food. Now, for many years, I scratched my head trying to figure out the difference between Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni, in as much as Kli Rishon, we're saying, can cook at 115 degrees, 120 degrees Fahrenheit, 50 degrees Celsius, whereas we're saying a Kli Sheni can't cook, it cannot cook, even if the water inside that Kli Sheni is 180 degrees, even if it's, you know, Fahrenheit, even if it's, you know, 75, 80, 90 degrees Celsius, we say it cannot cook. So for years, I couldn't really get my head around it. I think the only way to get your head around it is to understand this halachic status of being able to cook is a halachic phenomenon that we're defining. The halach is defining it, and not necessarily sort of the chemical phenomenon. So that be what it is. We're saying in general, a kli sheni cannot cook things. But we actually take things, meaning foodstuffs, and we divide them into three categories, the halacha does. There's things that are kalei habishul, easily cooked. There's chomri habishul, things that are very difficult to cook. And regular foods, which are most foods, which are neither kal, easy, nor chomor, difficult to cook. So when it comes to a kli sheni, we say only kalei habishul, even only easily cooked foods can be cooked inside a kli sheni. But things that are harder to cook, like water or oil or tavlin. Now, tavlin, which means spices, this gets confusing. Also confused me for years. Tavlin, which means spices, is referring to, let's say, a big ginger root or a big piece of tree bark that's cinnamon. Okay, it's a big hunk of ginger. So that big hunk of ginger is difficult to cook. And if you put in the kli sheni into your cup of tea, it may emit some ginger flavor into your tea, but it will not cook the ginger. So that's what we mean by tavlin. When in modern Hebrew, the word tavlin, which means spices also, you think of like, you know, finely shaved bits of oregano or something. That, of course, according to, is easy to cook because it's nice and thin. And according to many poskim, if you have finely cut spices like oregano or bits of parsley or whatever it is, that's actually called kalei habishul, easily cooked, like tea and so on, things that are very small flakes, thin flakes that can cook very easily with water. So this is very confounding. When the Mishnah refers to tavlin, it's considering something which is very difficult to cook, chomrei habishul, and it's thinking about a big, gigantic piece of ginger root or cinnamon or maybe even perhaps a whole onion, stuff like that, perhaps an onion. It's not thinking about the little spice that you sprinkle in from your spice shelf, of a little bit of nutmeg that's, you know, finely powdered and so on, which could cook very easily. Okay, so we say that a kli rishon, yes, could cook. A kli sheni in general cannot cook, except for things that are easily cooked, like egg or certain kinds of, like, you know, dried fish and so on, which is a little bit of hot water, so you need to make them now edible and cooked. So those are called kalei habishul. The problem is we've sort of lost tradition of which foods are considered to be kalei habishul. And therefore, the halacha assumes that except for that small list of things which we can confirm are difficult to cook, like, for example, you know, a big hunk of beef or something, we will assume that they are kalei habishul out of doubt and not put any foodstuffs into a kli sheni for fear that it could get cooked. Now, Tosfos, I should have said this before, perhaps, he gives a rationale why it should be that a kli sheni can't cook, whereas a kli rishon could cook. Tosfos suggests the idea is that there's a lot of heat stored up inside the walls of the container of a kli rishon, so it keeps on kind of getting, like, reinforced, the heat, whereas if you pour hot water into the cup, the teacup rapidly, you know, the cup itself is cold, it absorbs some of the heat, and then the heat dissipates quite quickly. So we're assuming that a kli sheni can't cook most foods, although because of the chumrah, we're not sure what are considered to be kalei habishul. We treat most foods as being kalei habishul, and we do not put them into a kli sheni at all. In case you're wondering, when you pour water out of a kli rishon, it's not considered to be a kli sheni until it gets into the container where the walls are sort of sucking its temperature away. So if you pour from a kli rishon, from the kettle, directly onto food, that's called irui kli rishon, pouring out of a kli rishon, and we say that also could cook at least the outer layer, like a thin layer of the food that gets poured the hot water on from the kli rishon, that thin outer layer could get cooked, and therefore we definitely do not do that. We do not pour directly from a kli rishon onto food. As far as the kli sheni goes, so now it becomes a bit of a question. If you take the kli sheni and you pour it into a kli shlishi, a third container, so there's many who say this cannot cook at all. Like, the cooking possibilities in a kli shlishi are nil, and you could even put kalei habishul, easily cooked things, into kli shlishi and not be afraid. That's how Moshe paskins. And therefore, according to Moshe, you could say, like, to put a tea bag into a kli shlishi, no problem, because even if tea is a kalei habishul, easily cooked, but a kli shlishi simply can't cook. Others learn that no, other poskim learned that no, even in a kli shlishi, and for that matter, there's no special thing about shlishi. Same with a ravi and a chamishi. The point is, as long as the water is still yato lettuce bowl and it's hot, it could cook kalei habishul, and regardless if it's a kli shlishi and so on, and therefore you could not put tea, like a tea bag, tea inside a kli shlishi. It doesn't matter, it's disallowed. That's how the Mishnah Berurah paskins, and many are machmer like that. So some homes make tea on Shabbos, and some homes only use tea scents, that they've pre-made the tea into liquid on Shabbos. Okay, that's not for now. But putting that aside, those are our different levels of kalim, if you will, on Shabbos. Now, our Mishnah is going to discuss that explicitly. It starts out by saying, hamecham, if you have a kettle, let's say, shepinahu, that you removed from the fire. This can be confusing. I don't even want to explain why it could be confusing. Pinahu means removed from the fire. Okay? It doesn't mean emptied out. So it's a kli rishon still. Lo yiten l'socho tzonen b'shvil sheyechamu. You cannot put cold water into that kettle so that the cold water should be heated up. Because if you did that, the kli rishon still could cook. And even though water is considered to be something that's not easily cooked, it certainly can be brought to being above yotzei lettuce, in which case you've now cooked the water and you'd be over the lav d'oraisa. So don't do that. Avol nosen hu l'socho o l'tocha kos k'dei l'havshiran. What you could do is pour a lot of cold water into the kettle, which would then make the whole mixture now be just warm water, less than yotzei lettuce. You know, say, let's say lukewarm water or just warm water, not hot water. And that would be okay because you're not cooking any water. Nothing's been cooked, and that'll be just fine. Again, water is sort of cook resistant, so that's why it's lenient to pour it in like that. No problem. And as for a kos, this is a little confusing. So we understand that the kettle was a kli rishon, the kos a kli sheni. So according to what I just said, there should be no reason at all why you can't put any water inside a kli sheni, because water is not easily cooked. And that indeed is the halacha. According to the Bar Tanura, this Tana holds that a kli sheni could cook. And that's why it lumps them together, and it's saying you can't put water into a kli rishon or a kli sheni unless you're putting enough water that the resultant mixture should be not yotzei lettuce, so you're not actually cooking the water you're adding. So the Bar Tanura learns that the kos is the same. Meaning the Bar Tanura learns that a kli sheni also could cook a little bit of water, but the Bar Tanura himself says that's just the ton of this part of the Mishnah, but actually the halacha and later on the Mishnah disagrees with that. Okay, fine. Ha'ilfas, if you have I'll translate that as a pan. V'kadera, I'll translate that as a pot. Meaning those are the utensils you put directly on the fire, on the stove. She'e'evirin mirutuchan. And mirutuchan. Murutachin. You remove them while they're still, you know, bubbling, boiling hot. So there's now you have a kli rishon off the fire. That being the case, it could cook. Therefore, lo yiten l'sochan tavlin. You shouldn't put your tavlin, even things like the ginger root, which is resistant to cooking, but since you're putting it into kli rishon, and the kli rishon, which was on the fire, so yotzei lettuce bo, it could still cook that piece of ginger, the tavlin, and that would be a lav d'oraisa. Avol nosen hu l'tocha ka'aro l'tocha tamchui. What you could do is decant. You could pour out the liquid from, let's say, the soup, whatever it is, that's inside this pot or pan, put it into a ka'ara. Ka'ara is like a serving, like a plate, you know, a person's bowl that he eats out of. A tamchui is like a serving dish that multiple people eat out of the dish. Like what you do in, let's say, in Shabbos. You take your chalent, you put it out of the chalent pot, which is a kli rishon, into the serving dish on the table, whatever that is, that's called the tamchui. So a kli sheni is not able to cook, and therefore says the Mishnah here, well, you should not, you may not put your tavlin, your ginger root, let's say, into the kli rishon, the pot or pan directly. You could put it into the plate or the serving bowl, no problem, because it can't cook as a kli sheni. Rabbi Yehuda says, lo kol hu nos, and Rabbi Yehuda says, you could even put those things, meaning the tavlin, for example, the spice, the ginger root, into a kli rishon, because he holds, once it's off the fire, it can't cook anymore, no problem. Chutz mudavar sheyesh bo chometz v'tzir, unless what's cooking inside the pot contains some catalyst which would make it, you know, facilitate the easier cooking of the food. For example, chometz, which is vinegar, it's acidic, or tzir, which is fish brine, also something which would sort of soften and ready up the, let's say, the ginger to be cooked faster. Okay, that's the Mishnah, that's the din. In case you're scratching your head wondering, wait a second, when I know the rules, you can't take cholent out of a serving dish and put on your plate with your lettuce, your salad for Shabbos, because you're afraid it could cook the salad, which is true for Ashkenazim. And the reason why is something kind of unrelated. There's a marshal, which we're machmir for, that a davar gush, a clump of food, retains its heat for a long time, doesn't let out its heat into like the walls of the container, and actually, essentially, that big hunk of potato you pull out of the cholent, or chicken piece of, a chicken thigh or a meatball or something, all these kind of things, there's big clumps of heated food on your plate, they're still retaining their heat for a long time, and therefore they function as a kli rishon. And therefore you still can't put, your pepper onto your cholent potato, even though it's on your plate, because we're afraid that the potato still has a status like a kli rishon. That's how Ashkenazim are machmir, and that's the din for Sephardim not. So that's something separate, because we're treating this davar gush, this clump of food, as if it were still a kli rishon. Fine, that's then just finally the thing about salt, important. So salt, it's not clear how salt is categorized. Some say salt is very resistant to cooking, and therefore you could sprinkle your salt on, no problem, even the potato, the kli rishon like that. Others say no, salt is readily cooked. And that being the case, you couldn't sprinkle your salt on the potato, or in the pot for that matter. The halacha is only lamaisa if you're talking about salt that's not coming from the ocean, which has sort of been cooked to evaporate and produce the salt. So most salt is called sea salt, and it's not a problem at all together. If you buy the fancy Himalayan rock salt that was never boiled, then according to many, you should be machmer and not put that salt directly onto your davar gush, your potato, and so now onto the pot or pan, because that salt could still get cooked. Shabbos Per Gimel, Mishnah Vav, 3-6. This Mishnah deals with a great many topics. One of those topics is Muktzah. It's not the only topic. And we touched Muktzah briefly before, and of course everyone's to some degree familiar with Muktzah, but I feel that a brief synopsis of the whole picture of Muktzah would be very useful for this Mishnah, and I'm sure for many people in general. So let's do that quickly. There's a Din D'Rabbanan, as you know, which says that on Shabbos one is not to move things that are not pre-designated from before Shabbos for use on Shabbos. Things which are not pre-designated, that's called mukhan, ready for use on Shabbos, are things that are set aside for non-use on Shabbos, and that's muktzah. Muktzah means set aside, as in set aside for non-use, don't touch it. The reason for this, there are a number of proposals given in the Rishonim. One is that the Shabbos experience for someone who doesn't do malacha, like he's saying, learning all day, is not much different than during the week, and therefore to make it feel different, the rules of muktzah come into play to make sure that one doesn't even touch things that are not appropriate for Shabbos, therefore he feels the Shabbos experience is different. And certainly I think we can relate to that, because nowadays almost the defining feature, the primary defining feature, if you will, of the Shabbos experience is muktzah. If you ask me, every child, they don't say something's usher on Shabbos to say, oh, I can't write on Shabbos. Is it muktzah? Because muktzah pervades the whole Shabbos experience, which is what Chazal wanted. Other reasons given in the Rishonim are that people, if they won't touch things like pens and hammers, won't come to do malacha inadvertently. And another reason given is that if you don't touch things you're not supposed to, you won't end up carrying them doing the malacha of chotzah. For any or all those reasons, Chazal set aside this rule that if something isn't mukhan, designated for use on Shabbos, which basically, under normal circumstances, de facto just applies to food and kelim, utensils that you use on Shabbos. Anything else essentially is not mukhan, it's muktzah, and can't be used unless pre-designated beforehand. Now, the rule is, muktzah says not that you can't touch certain things, but you can't move them. Tiltul is what's forbidden, moving the muktzah item. And for all types of muktzah, you actually are, yes, allowed to move the muktzah item if the way you're moving it is either A, tiltul min hatzad, indirectly through another object, or B, kala'achar yad, in a very unusual way. Literally, kala'achar yad means with the back of your hand, although the back of your hand probably is not sufficient for most types of kala'achar yad. You have to use, like, let's say, your elbow or your teeth or blowing it or something like that, which is very weird. So that's typically okay. But otherwise, direct movement of muktzah items is not allowed. Now, there are three primary categories of muktzah. One is what's called muktzah machmas gufo, something that's intrinsically muktzah because it has no use on Shabbos, like a rock or sand. Then you have muktza, machmas, chesron, kis, things that you don't normally fiddle with unless you're using them for their specifically designated purpose, because if they get ruined in any way, you incur a tremendous economic loss. So a classic example for that would be, let's say, the moel's knife or the shochet's knife. So if the shochet's knife gets nicked, so then he can't do shechita anymore, that's bad news, and therefore one will not use a shochet's knife for cutting cheese, etc. That's called muktza machmas chesron kis. And a rule of thumb, let's say, would be anything that you wouldn't let your kids play with is probably muktza machmas chesron kis, so your passports, for example, in the way, since passports are for passports and nothing else. A third category is muktza machmas iser, some which is basically intrinsically iser for whatever reason on Shabbos. So, for example, if you catch a fish, you're not allowed to catch fish on Shabbos. Once you've caught a fish on Shabbos, that fish becomes muktza. Or if, let's say, you have wet laundry. So wet laundry, not only is it not functional on Shabbos, but if you play with it on Shabbos, you'll like to come squeezing out the liquid, and that would be an iser. So therefore, the laundry itself is muktza machmas iser, nothing to do with it except something forbidden, therefore it's muktza. An important subcategory of muktza machmas iser, things that are forbidden, is a kli shemalatala iser. That's a utensil who essentially is a dual-purpose item, but it's its primary purpose is for forbidden malacha. So a kli shemalachtula iser, the kind of utensil which is used for forbidden activities, let's say textbook case would be the hammer. Hammers are used for building, bone is asr on Shabbos. So hammers are muktza because they're a kli shemalachtula iser, they do normally forbidden things. However, such a dual-purpose use item like a hammer, which could also be used, let's say, for opening a nut, cracking open a nut. So it actually is, yes, permitted to move a kli shemalachtula iser, and if you're using it for a permitted purpose, and actually there's actually two reasons why you could move the kli shemalachtula iser. This confuses people. Only for a kli shemalachtula iser, these two special rules apply. You can move it directly, meaning you can pick it up and take the hammer and carry it away with your hand. If you needed either a tzorach makoma for the place where the hammer is lying, in other words, you want to sit on the couch, the camera's on the couch, it's in your way, you can just pick up the hammer and move it aside because you need the place where the hammer is sitting. That would not be true for the passport. That would not be true for a rock. Those kinds of muktza, the passport again, chesron kis, the rock, gufo, you need to sort of kick off on the floor with your foot or something like that. But the hammer, it's a kli shemalach le'iser, and you could pick it up with your hand to move it away to use its place, makoma, or for tzorach gufo, if you need the hammer itself for a permitted purpose. So you're going to pick it up to crack nuts, you can pick it up in a conventional way and crack a nut in a conventional way. Yes, that's permitted. Those are your three primary categories of muktza. We will deal with them here in the Mishnah presently, some of them. There are also three other less common categories. One is muktza machmas mius. If something is the kind of thing you wouldn't want to touch because it's disgusting and grimy and filthy and gross, so then it becomes muktza all to itself. That's one category. You have muktza machmas mitzvah, something set aside for mitzvah use, like your tzchach on Sukkos, so even during Chol HaMoed, the tzchach you can't move it and so, you can't play with it on Shabbos, you can't eat the food that's dangling from the sukkah, etc. And finally, you have muktza machmas, you have nolad. Nolad is something which has come into being in earnest, a new thing that's come into being on Shabbos. The nolad we actually did have previously, but those are those three things, muktza machmas mitzvah, machmas mius, and nolad are quite uncommon in real life, but they're muktza too. In addition to those six categories, the three major, three minor, if you will, and this comes in our Mishnah to play a little bit, if you have a non-muktza item, like a plate, and it's supporting a muktza item, it's called a basis, a base, a platform for that muktza item. So provided that that's what it's doing, it's serving the thing above it, so it's subordinate to it, and therefore not just the change on the plate, the change of course is money and is muktza, but the plate itself supporting the money, holding the money, is also basis, ladavar aser, it's a base for the forbidden money, and then therefore the plate is muktza. And the rule is that when it comes to muktza in general, migod iskatzi, once it's been designated as muktza going into Shabbos, so then it's muktza even if the muktza, let's say for example, the kids come and take the money off the plate. Now it's just a plate. But since it went into Shabbos being a basis, it remains a basis and mukta, even though there's no money on it anymore right now. Okay, so that is the basic lay of the land of mukta. Now our Mishnah has a bunch of topics here. Let's, with that background, let's see it inside. And the first thing we say right away is, Einos kli tachas haner lekabel bo es hashemen. You're not allowed to put a plate, a regular plate, beneath a lamp that's burning on Shabbos to catch the oil that's dripping out of that lamp. Now, the reason why, actually, I would argue, has nothing to do with mukta. Okay? This is called a separate rule all to itself, called bitul kli mehechano, which means making a perfectly usable utensil no longer usable on Shabbos because it's now got mukta on top of it. Okay, it's not really a din and mukta at all, the truth is. Some Rishonim explain it as, it's for sure it's the gezeira, it's a derabanan all to itself, they didn't want you doing that to kalim, making usable kalim non-usable on Shabbos. Some explain it is because it resembles bone construction, as much as it's almost like you've cemented this plate to the floor now, or the table, because once you have the mukta item on it, you can't move it, so you've like cemented the plate down, if you will. Others say it's comparable or looks a little bit like soser, destroying things, dismantling things, because you've made this like a, you've taken a functional and made it a non-functional plate. Whatever the case is, I would argue it has nothing to do with mukta whatsoever. Okay, but the Mishnah is saying there's a prohibition against bitul kli mehechano, from taking a kli which is usable and making it non-usable. And therefore the Mishnah says again, einos kli tachas haner, you cannot put that plate beneath the lamp, the kabel bo es hashemen, to catch the dripping oil, because the oil would make it now muvutal mehechano, no longer usable. Vim nosem b'od yom mutter, but if you put the plate on the table beneath the lamp before Shabbos came in, that's okay, because now this plate's been used as a, is being used as an oil catcher, and going into Shabbos was never muchan, was never set aside for use on Shabbos, it was set aside for being an oil catcher, and therefore that's okay. The Mishnah continues by saying, ve'eino neosin mimenu, you may not get benefit from the oil that dripped onto the plate, lefi she'eino menu muchan, now we're in mukta. The oil that was set aside for the lamp on Shabbos is considered to be a basis for the flame, because it supports the flame. And that being the case, even if the oil drips out of the lamp, so now it's just oil, and oil is good for putting on your chapped hands, and it's good for eating in your salad dressing, but this oil was set aside going into Shabbos for fuel for the fire. And that being the case, it was not mukhan before Shabbos, and therefore, even on Shabbos now that it's separated out from the lamp, it remains mukta, not mukhan, and therefore you cannot use it on Shabbos. Misha continues on by saying, now we're moving to a new area of mukta. It says, metaltle ner chadash, yes, you may move a new, never-before-used oil lamp, like a clay lamp, of a low yashan, but you can't move an old one, meaning one that had been burned before. Prior to ever using the lamp before, Chazal understood that this lamp had a variety of uses. It, of course, primarily is going to be used as a lamp. And since you never used it before, you could use it as, you know, a baby bottle and a doorstopper. I don't know what they made good use of, you know, multiple uses for kalim in those days. And therefore, it's usable, and therefore you could move it on Shabbos. But once it's been used, it's now grimy, and no one wants to touch a grimy, ichy oil lamp. So it becomes mukta machmas mius. Something that's disgusting, and therefore your hands are off and you won't touch it. Now, Rabbi Shimon, the next line of the Mishnah here, he rejects the notion of mukta machas mios. He says it's not a thing. There's no such category. And therefore, he says, kol neros metaltlin, you can move any ner, any candle, meaning even one that's been used before, and even one which had been used and has gone out, because he also rejects mukta machas iser. He rejects the idea of migut eskatzi, once it's was mukta into Shabbos, it stays mukta. No, Shimon rejects all those things. Shimon simply says, chutz min haner hadolek b'Shabbos, if the candle is actually a flame and burning on that lamp, so certainly you can't move it, because then it's a separate din derabanan, unless you come to inadvertently extinguish the flame, which would be an iser derabanan. But once the flame has gone out, you can move the lamp, whether it's mius and gross, whether it's was not supposed to be used on Shabbos, it was before and it was machmas iser. All these things are not a problem, says Rabbi Shimon. Halacha does not follow him. Finally, the Mishnah says, "Nosn kli tachas haner lekabel nitzotzos." You may put any utensil, like a plate, beneath or beside a sputtering lamp that's on fire, l'kabel nitzotzos, to catch the sparks that are flying off it. Meaning you want to protect the wooden table beneath this lamp, and the lamp is sputtering and the little sparks are flying off it. Don't want to get little charcoal, you know, black dots on your wooden table, so you put a plate to protect the table. Now, we just said a minute ago, you cannot do that to catch the oil, but now we're saying, yes, you could do it to catch the sparks. And the reason why is because we're saying that while oil is a thing, has mamashos, has substance to it, and therefore oil catching onto a plate makes the, is mevatel klei hayachano, means the plate now is holding oil and can't be moved. Not true by sparks, because sparks ain behem mamash, they don't have a substance to them. And although, of course, while they're burning, they're little burning things, but once the spark has gone out, and there's like basically nothing of substance left on the plate could be moved anyways. There's nothing left on the plate of significance, halachic significance. So that's okay. So it says you may do that, meaning you may put the plate beneath the sputtering, or beside the sputtering lamp to catch the sparks. Veloiten l'socho mayim mipnei shuv mechabeb. What you cannot do is fill that plate with water. And the reason why is because if you fill it up with water as the spark flies in, so then you'd actually be over the doraisa of mechaba, of extinguishing. Therefore, you can't do it, and therefore we're saying even if there's no sparks flying right now, you can't put water in the plate that's going to catch the sparks. And in fact, the Gemara says you can't even do it on Erev Shabbos. Fill a tray with water next to the lamp that will potentially be sparking on Shabbos. The reason why is because it's a Dinder Rabbanan, because we're afraid that a person would do it on Shabbos and then they'd be over Mechabeh.